I remember when our youngest daughter, Maureen, was home. She was in high school, and one night she said to me, "Could I borrow one of your dresses, you know, one of those long dresses that you still have hanging down in the basement, to wear to school tomorrow?" And I said, "Well, sure." She said, "Well, we have some special event." So she went downstairs, and she came up a few minutes later, and she had one of my very favorite dresses over her shoulder. And I said, "Oh, that's one of my favorites, and you are going to look so beautiful in that. What is tomorrow? Is it formal day? Is it vintage dress day?" And as she ran up the steps with a dress on her shoulder, she turned around and said to me, "Oh no, it's nerd day." Yep. Well, you might guess from that all too true story that I'm not always great at discarding things, letting them go. And you know you have hung on to an item too long when it's one of your cherished pieces of clothing and your child wears it as a nerd costume. So at any rate, we laugh about that a lot to this day. So let's just take a little survey. And you know we always say that what says here, what's revealed here stays here. So we're not going to announce this to the world. But how many of you are savers? Now notice I did not say hoarders. I said savers, okay? How many of you like to hold on to old items? Because... me too. I'm with you. Because, we either have an emotional attachment to them. Some people, not to be named, are holding up other people's hands, but that's okay. We either have an emotional attachment to them, or in my case, I just know they might come in handy someday, right? All right, how about the rest of you? How many of you periodically go through your closets, your cabinets, your garage, and get rid of stuff, I'm going to use the word stuff, that you no longer need or use? Let me see your hands. Oh my goodness, we have a lot of you here. I could put you all to work. There's some things around here that need to be done. Okay, well, those of you actually who regularly release possessions are exercising a spiritual power, believe it or not, and that's the power that Charles Fillmore called renunciation, often called the power of elimination or simply the power of release. And it is our power to remove, release, deny, denounce, say no, and let go. Like all of our spiritual powers, we can use this at the physical level, at the mental level, and or at the spiritual level. Now, okay. Woodpecker, okay. We have another guest for service this morning. Woodpeckers are also welcome. Okay, at the physical level, it might result in cleaning out a basement or closet, or it might even manifest in breaking a habit, like maybe unhealthy eating or nail biting. And when we think about it, our physical bodies are great examples of this power, aren't they? We breathe in air, we acquire oxygen, and we breathe out carbon dioxide. We take in food and we release waste. And if we could not release waste, our bodies would eventually shut down. And in our daily lives, we bring in groceries and we release the garbage. This reminds me of a wonderful children's poem that some of you may know by Shel Silverstein called Sarah Cynthia Sylvia Stout Would Not Take the Garbage Out. Does anybody know it? Okay, a lot of you know. I'm not going to read the whole poem. It's really long, but I'm going to read parts of it. Sarah Cynthia Sylvia Stout would not take the garbage out. Even though her daddy would scream and shout, she simply refused to take the garbage out. And I forgot to go to the next slide. There she is. Actually, I picture it worse than that picture, but that's the best one I could find. So it piled up to the ceilings, coffee grounds, potato peelings, brown bananas, rotten peas, chunks of sour cottage cheese. It filled the can, it covered the door, the floor. It cracked the windows and blocked the door with bacon rinds and chicken bones, drippy ends of ice cream cones, prune pits, peach pits, orange peel, gloppy glumps of cold oatmeal. Are you ready for your hot dog yet? I'm getting you ready. Okay. Cold French fries and rancid meat, yellow lumps of cream of wheat. At last, the garbage reached so high that finally it touched the sky, and the garbage reached across the state, from New York to the Golden Gate, and there, In the garbage she did hate, poor Sarah met an awful fate. Thank you, Bob. There. Sarah met an awful fate. And so it didn't end well with Sarah, and it doesn't end well with us unless we are able to release and let go what needs to be released. And as hard as it might be to release some of our cherished possessions, for some of us anyway, and even habits that we've had for years, those are hard, but those are not nearly as hard as releasing our mental garbage. The power of elimination is the power behind denials. It's the power to say no to error thoughts, feelings, and beliefs. Paul Hesselbeck, in his book Power Up, says, if we truly want to grow in the awareness of our spiritual nature, we must be able to deny and disempower thoughts, feelings, and beliefs that hinder us or hold us back. Created in the image and likeness of God, we talked about that as we explored the creative process. Created in the image and likeness of God, we are spiritual beings having a human experience. Spiritually, there is always an absolute truth, and that's the truth of good, unchanging, unlimited, and eternal. And also, along with that, we experience relative truth. And that's the truth of those outer appearances, which are always shifting and changing. They're not real, with a capital R. Charles Fillmore tells us in Revealing Word that the metaphysician places his or her judgment in the absolute in order to demonstrate God's supreme power. To exercise spiritual judgment, we have to erase from consciousness all those false beliefs, all the garbage that's in our human minds, garbage like evil and limitation. In other words, we must erase the false in order to embrace the true. Now, a pertinent gospel story related in both Mark and Matthew is the story of Jesus cursing the fig tree. Do you remember that story? This actually takes place in the final days of Jesus' ministry, right before he drives the money changers out of the temple. When they came from Bethany, this was right after the raising of Lazarus, Jesus was hungry. And the text says, this is Mark's text, and seeing in the distance a fig tree in leaf, he went to see if he could find anything on it. Wanted something to eat. When he came to it, he found nothing but leaves, for it was not the season for figs. And he said to it, may no one ever eat fruit from you again. And the disciples were with him, and so they heard that. Now, just a few verses later, as they're coming back from driving the money changers out of the temple, we read, in the morning, as they passed by, they saw the fig tree had withered away to its roots. Now, taken literally, this seems to portray Jesus as impatient and unfair, doesn't it? As he literally curses the innocent tree. I remember as a child in Sunday school, I was terrified by this tale. I just couldn't integrate that mixed message of Jesus loves me, this I know, with this Jesus who was cursing this innocent tree and causing it to die. And I remember specifically being told by my fifth grade Sunday school teacher, if we don't obey the voice of God, we too will be judged and punished. I could just see myself being zapped like that tree, you know? And that reinforced that idea of a separate, vengeful, gotcha God, a God looking down from some faraway place, watching and judging my every move. Now, some Bible scholars have noted that this event shows Jesus, even near the end of his earthly life, as both fully human and fully divine. I mean, he's hungry, he gets angry, and yet the divinity shows in just a minute. Because when the disciples notice that the tree is dead, Jesus uses it as a valuable teaching tool about faith and belief in some verses you will all recognize. So as the morning passed, they saw the fig tree withered away, and it was Peter who noticed it first. Then Peter remembered what Jesus had done a day earlier and said to him, Rabbi, look, the fig tree that you cursed has withered. Jesus answered them, have faith in God. Truly I tell you, if you say to this mountain, be taken up and thrown into the sea, And if you do not doubt in your heart, but believe that what you say will come to pass, it will be done for you. Now, metaphysically, this event shows, maybe, that the disciples and us, shows that Jesus is telling the disciples and us what we must do with that doubt in our hearts. In Divine Audacity, Linda Martello-Witsit writes that in cursing the tree, Jesus was demonstrating the importance of renouncing all that is unproductive, showing us to use the principal tools of denial and release to rid ourselves of false beliefs. Only when we release fear and limitation can we truly abide in faith. Our minds are kind of like trees when you think about it. Our limiting human error thoughts produce little or no fruit, while our spiritual thoughts produce a bountiful harvest. So through our divine gift of renunciation, we have the power to let go, to cause to die, if you will, any conscious or subconscious beliefs that are not aligned with what is eternally, absolutely true about the divine and about ourselves. That means we need to release any false embedded theology about a separate and vengeful God in order to embrace the spiritual truth that God is pure divine love and energy and peace, and that energy, love, and peace indwells us all. Charles Fillmore said, "By realizing the mind of Christ, we become one with the Absolute." And his favorite Bible verse, does anybody know, can guess what Charles Fillmore's favorite Bible verse might be? Anybody? Okay, well, you're about to find out, okay? Ready? "Christ in you, your hope and glory," from Colossians 1:27. And sometimes I think we parrot those words a lot in Unity, but we don't always spend enough time contemplating what does that really mean, Christ within you. Unity means oneness. We are created in the image and likeness of the divine, one with the eternal, omnipresent, all-powerful one. And that power and presence is individualized in each one of us, as us, through the indwelling Christ. We therefore are endowed with the 12 powers of the Christ and all divine ideas, and we are on this earth to express the attributes of the divine. Here's my new favorite Charles Fillmore quote. The quote is old, but it's my new favorite one. And those of you who took the prayer class and those of you who are in the chaplain training have already seen it. He said in Talks in Truth, chapter 8, now let's just take these words into our hearts because these are profound words. "It is your mission to express all that you can imagine God to be. Let this be your standard of achievement. Never lower it or allow yourself to be belittled by the cry, of sacrilege. You can attain anything you imagine." There's that power of imagination that we worked with in the creative process. "You can attain anything you can imagine. If you imagine that it is possible to God, it is also possible to you. This is the law. Let none belittle himself or dwarf the supreme by trying to annul it." Wow. Wow. The 12 powers of the Christ, our powers, are, in the words of Martello-Witsit, describable, recognizable, and activatable. So it's crucial, it's absolutely crucial, that we release what many have called our only human consciousness, that we let go of false beliefs that are preventing us from claiming our divine identity. It is from human consciousness only that we hold any residual thoughts of limitation. For many of us, that means letting go of negative messages from our childhood so that we may have internalized. And I'm sure you all have yours. I'll share one of mine with you. I was raised in a family with two very loving parents, and they, I'm sure, meant well for us. But it was only when I found Unity that I realized that I was actually raised in a poverty consciousness. My parents were very young during the days of the Depression, and my mother especially just seemed to be haunted by some images from that time. And I can very clearly remember when I wanted something, you know, something that wasn't necessary in her view. Her words to me were always, let's see if you all have ever heard this. Well, you know, money doesn't grow. You got it. How many heard that from their parent? Must have been a thing, you know? It must have been a thing that parents say. One of those parent voice things. I really did carry that message for years. I did, until finally I let it go. And once we discover our true identity, we stop letting ourselves be pushed around by the world of appearances and others' opinions. Charles Fillmore writes in The 12 Powers of Man, "The beliefs that you and your ancestors have held in mind have become thought currents so strong that their course in you can be changed, only by your definite decision to entertain them no longer." So we have to make that choice to just banish those thoughts from our consciousness. And so, if we are carrying any messages of limitation about ourselves from the past, any feelings of being not good enough, not smart enough, not worthy enough, we have to let them go. Whoever told us that was wrong, even if it was our well-intended parents or the church of our childhood. We can't let error messages trap us in the past and control our present and future. There's a Bible story where just that happened, and it's the story of the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah in Genesis 19. As the story goes, God apparently had a fierce anger toward the inhabitants of the town for their sins and behavior. So God, this is the Old Testament, so God decided to destroy the cities with fire and brimstone, sulfur really, dumped from above. And we pick the story up in verse 24. "Then the Lord rained on Sodom and Gomorrah sulfur and fire from the Lord out of heaven. And he overthrew those cities and all the plain and all the inhabitants of the cities and what grew on the ground," wiped everything out. But Lot's wife behind him looked back at the destruction of the city. And in doing so, she became a pillar of salt. Well, it's believed that this story is really a religious interpretation of an actual historical event where two cities were destroyed and then some surrounding cities were not. But whatever the history, this story is powerful on a metaphysical level. It can be interpreted as an extreme example of one who failed to use her God-given power of renunciation. Lot's wife, and by the way, have you ever wondered what Lot's wife's name was? Well, it's not in the Bible, but it is in some old Jewish traditions. She was named Ado or Edith, according to some. But at any rate, she ignored divine guidance because she could not let go of her old life, even in the face of a crisis of destruction of the two cities. And of course, we know that salt is a preservative, right? And in this case, it crystallized her regrets about leaving her old home. Of this story, Winifred Houseman says, "Not only are we being told to let go of all thoughts that are not keeping with divine concepts," and I would add, those would be thoughts like fear, doubt, worry, and unworthiness, "but we are also," Houseman says, "to relinquish thoughts and feelings which we have outgrown, even though at one point in our lives they might have been useful." So fixated on the past, Lot's wife was unable to even move forward. Sometimes, can you think of a time in your life that you had to let go of some present good in order to allow a greater good to unfold? It's very common. And of course, exactly what those thoughts and feelings we have to release are is different for every one of us, based on our own past messages and experiences. In the book, The Gathering, a 40-day guide to the power of group and personal prayer, which the chaplain studied last year, Reverend Jim Rosemergie devotes a chapter to releasing any part of our human self that is a barrier to God. Now, of course, divine presence does not erect any barriers. Who erects the barriers? We do. We absolutely do. And Rosemergie says that a spiritual life is not about addition. It's not about what else we have to do to be spiritual, but it's about subtraction. It's about what we need to release. And he poses the compelling question, what are you willing to release in order to move forward in your spiritual journey? And when we studied this book last year, the prayer chaplains brainstormed some possible answers to that question. Now, I want to say if we did that again today, they might be a little bit different, but I wanted to share them with you. These are what the chaplains thought might be barriers to our oneness. Lack of forgiveness. We're going to talk about that again in a couple weeks, because that's an important issue. Feelings of guilt, shame, and insecurity, sometimes given to us from our childhood. Feelings of unworthiness goes right along with that. Belief in lack and limitation of any kind. Fear, anger and hatred, judgment of oneself, others, or situations, and believing what we see is the only reality. Does those look familiar? They might. I mean, those are some things that typical in our human consciousness we need to release. Bob and I went to a funeral, a family funeral this week, and I won't even say what church it was in because it could have been in lots of churches. Once again, I heard that saying that haunted me in my childhood, I am not worthy to receive you, but just say the word and I shall be healed. Have you ever heard that in the church of your childhood? What a message. I mean, what an incorrect message we were told, that we're not worthy. And so finally, to discover what old errors and beliefs we need to release, each one of us needs to make, this is a self-discovery, needs to make it on our own, it's important to monitor our self-talk. It's really crucial that we stop naming ourselves anything less than the divine. So, if we are saying things to ourselves like, I am stupid, I am not good enough, I am worthless, any of those things on the screen, we need to realize that we are listening. And it's sad enough when others give us those error messages, but I feel like it's even worse when we give them to ourselves. We must eliminate the negative self-talk, because what we tell ourselves every day will either lift us up or tear us down. And when we engage in negative self-talk, we not only demean and diminish ourselves, but we demean, diminish, and as Charles Fillmore said, dwarf the supreme. Instead, we can use the power of our word to claim all the God-given gifts that are truly our divine inheritance. Remember those sacred words, I am? The words that God used to tell Moses his name? Remember he said, tell them I am has sent you? In the Hebrew, I am meant, I am that I am. I am what I shall evermore be. And centuries later, Jesus the Christ told us, I am the light of the world. You are the light of the world. And so today, I'd like you to join me this morning in just getting rid of all that negative self-talk, and let's join together in some positive self-talk as we just affirm where we stand with these 12 powers, beginning with, I am the light of faith. Say that with me, would you? I am the light of faith. We're going to do all the others and say them like you mean it, okay? I am the light of strength. I am the light of wisdom. I am the light of love. I am the light of power. I am the light of imagination. I am the light of understanding. I am the light of will. I am the light of order. I am the light of zeal. I am the light of renunciation, what we're working on today, and I am the light of life. And so it is, and so we are grateful for the power of renunciation that allows us to release the beliefs and thoughts of anything less than what we truly are. And so let's just take a moment now to affirm the power and presence of the divine as we say, there is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is. Together, there is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is.